You. Welcome, everyone. As noted, this is the third of three in our series. It has been very well received, so we will launch another series next year with probably a different format to feature bringing in partners in the organization design space. So we're delighted to welcome today Agent Noon. Our basic format for this series has been to think about the organization. So what we're going to do is work through a real use case. We're going to talk about ROI of working in this way with the assistance of platform and tools, and then bringing in a business case in the organization. As I said, our next series will probably focus on a different perspective to be able to help with that. What we'll do logistically is I'll mind the chat, and I will interrupt when we get two or three questions. Otherwise, we'll work through the presentation, and I believe we are sharing the content. We've got the content developed in such a way so that we can send it out afterwards. And then a reminder, third of three, these are all on the website, so you can go catch the other two and this one as well, the recording. So Ali, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to meet you, everyone. First time doing a tech talk for me. So any feedback, anything that you comes to mind as we are going through the content, just put your hand up and ask. I don't know what the format was, but like, I'd like it to be as interactive as possible because the idea of speaking for a whole hour is a little daunting. So without further ado, I'm going to start to share my screen and give you a sense of what we are trying to build at Agent Noon, why we've built it, and so on and so forth. Can everybody see my screen?
We can.
Yes? Okay, I just want to, sorry, 1 second. I just want to make sure I can play audio on this thing. So before I can share sound. Okay, great. Now, you can still see my screen? Thumbs
we can.
Up, please. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you have any trouble or anything that comes up, just let me know because I can't see the people. So if there's anything, just speak up and I'll stop talking. All right. So my name is Ali. I'm the CEO Agent Noon. We started this company exactly 3 years ago today. So it's a really fun day to be doing this. There's a lot happening in the world today as well, as you probably many of you may know. But you know, the 3 years have gone by very quickly because we are so focused on what we're doing and why we're doing it. I would love to kind of use this conversation to talk about why we started Agent Noon, kind of what our perspective is, where we think organizational design is today, where we think it's going to go tomorrow. I've actually selected Etihad Airways, which is a customer of ours out in the Middle East, as a case study customer. And they've been very grateful to be able to let me talk about some specifics of the work that we've done with them. But then for the ROI piece, we're going to pick a different confidential example because I don't want to go into too much detail on their business. But safe to say that I wanted to pick an actual customer so that we can talk about how and what was done instead of like a very sort of generic confidentiality constrained conversation. And finally, there's some time for questions and feedback. But if you have questions, just, you know, ask and I'll try to answer them as quickly as possible. Okay, so a little bit about me. I have started this company about 3 years ago. Prior to that, I mean, I live in Toronto, Canada. That's where I'm calling from today. I have an undergrad in computer science. I worked in enterprise integration, so like connecting Workday to SAP and Oracle Financials, was where I started my career. Quickly moved up into consulting. First technology consulting, like technology strategy architecture. And then post MBA got into management consulting, where I did a lot of operating model work, a lot of org design, both in the sort of M&A context as well as in the organizational transformation context, between North America and the Middle East. That was a lot of fun. About 11 years ago, I left consulting to go start a company that did on-device machine learning or AI. And we basically were able to do driver telematics off of phones to be able to help companies like Uber, Careem, Gojek, Allstate Insurance, Microsoft, and many others figure out rash driving, phone handling, car crashes, and things like that. So very technical company, and very early to this AI revolution. I think many people know this, but like Toronto and the University of Toronto is actually home to a lot of the machine learning research led by Professor Geoffrey Hinton. So we were very sort of fortunate to work with the early AI researchers because we were incubated by University of Toronto program in my first company. So we sold that company in 2017 to a larger European company. And that's kind of where I discovered the need for Asian Noon, because we had a bunch of different business units, different parts of the world. It was quite challenging to do something very quickly that would be able to help us answer like foundational questions on who do we have, what do they do, and how is the sort of structure, cost, and productivity of them aligned to what we're trying to do as a unified entity. So built a Python notebook to ingest all the data, clean it up, make a bunch of assumptions, and then visualize a couple of things. That at that time, I didn't think it was a company or a product to be made. I thought it was a cool project to do. But over the years, what I realized is that there's a lot of demand for fast and sort of non-database constrained. I know it's a very technical word, but this is a tech talk, right? So fast software that people can kind of manipulate the data to be able to look at the data a certain way. And we started the company 3 years ago. It's been fantastic. We were part of Y Combinator, which is a well-known accelerator out in the Bay Area. And we started there in 22. And since then, it's been a phenomenal run. We have really been able to take a lot of our technological expertise and learn very quickly from people such as the folks in this room to be able to figure out kind of what the needs of the users are, what the needs of the businesses are. The world has only been changing and changing faster. So it's been a really fantastic time because there is a lot of change happening globally. There's a lot of transformation happening with AI. There's also a lot of sort of increased impetus on businesses and leaders to do more, do faster. And I think we've kind of fit those places right in.
So Ali, in the 3 years, yes, what's been your surprise or your most key learning since you discovered the need, you know, to be able to change your organizations quickly and now?
Oh, okay. That is a great question. So what have I learned over the last 3 years? I think I'd probably go for an hour on all the learnings. But one assumption that I had made was that the problem was very hard for us to do because we were combining. When we first discovered the problem was very hard for us because we were combining data from, let's say, four different entities, and we're trying to smash it together and normalize it to kind of some canonical organizational structure and then be able to kind of do apples to apples comparisons. And for like a company, like a large enterprise, they must have a lot of data quality, data governance, data cleanliness type things, so that their data must be a lot easier to do this kind of stuff with. Because, like, you know, 15 years ago, I would write integrations between all these systems. So I was like, okay, well, that technology must have evolved significantly, where by now a company should be able to have really clean data that's not fragmented and be able to make really good insights on top of it. So I was totally wrong about that. We don't have many customers, maybe any customers, that can say we have perfect data on the people, the positions, the work, the cost, and how that changes. So I think the first thing is it took us quite a while to understand the depth of the data challenges that were needed to be resolved. If we were to live up to our promise of a software that is fast and easy, because, you know, a lot of the work is actually cleaning up the data, getting the data, making sure that confidentiality is not being compromised, and so on and so forth, right? So I think that was the first thing I learned. And it took us about a year just to kind of build the right data foundation to be able to do this at a very high pace with our customers. And so that was the first learning. I have two more if you want, and I can go through them.
You do two more and then let's go to our use case, because I think this is really insightful. It, for me, just the validation, because that's my experience as well. There's bad data and there's really bad data is my,
yeah.
My experience.
And you have to be super careful when somebody says we have really good data, because it's statistically, it's quite likely that they don't have good data. But you also have to convince them that they don't have good data, which is an extra added step of work that you probably need to get into your scope. So that's the first one. Data is fragmented. It changes all the time. It's not for a multitude of reasons that I don't think is good use of our time. You need a really strong data foundation to be able to deal with both data coming out of your Workday or SAP SuccessFactors or Oracle HCM or the 97 others. But you also want to be able to ingest first-party data, which is not in that HRIS. It could be things like sales quotas. It could be things like business outcomes. It could be things like projects, et cetera. So the other thing that I learned, which kind of will be a nice segue to my next slide, is that finance and HR speak different languages, right? The thing I said, I was on Bloomberg TV last year, and I said something which was like, HR speaks French and finance speaks German. And what you need is an interest translation layer between the two. And that's what we act as for a lot of our customers, because, speed is our superpower. We can instantly translate between positions or people and cost centers, which is a considerable undertaking for most people. And because we can do that instantly and we can do that at high accuracy rates, it becomes really, I've seen this happen so many times where the decision maker, the CEO or whatever will be like, how is it that my finance leader and my HR leader are agreeing with each other, saying that what I'm saying is, may have some challenges, right? So I think that's been also really insightful learning. The third one is that imagine if you had a really fast and really easy to use product. The leadership team has an incredibly strong appetite to actually go in and start using it themselves, right? We see the democratization of tools with advanced technologies. And the assumption is that all that democratization is only going to occur downstream. So it'll go to like HRBPs in specific geographies or whatever it may be, in addition to the people leading the transformation activity. But the other thing that we observed was that it's also happening upstream. So for a number of our customers, when you see a decision maker or a senior person, let's say a level one, they're like, oh, I want to use this myself. I have this like scenario that I want to build out, or I have this what if situation that I want to model out, but I don't want to involve a lot of people into it. It's equal parts scary and exciting, because a lot of these people have actually not used software themselves, right? So the implications of them just dragging boxes around without having a full sense of what that means from an organizational health perspective is actually quite dangerous. But it's also quite liberating, because we can sandbox them into an environment and they can make some changes and let the AI kind of be a thought partner to them to say, oh, I see why this thing doesn't work. It was sounded good until I had kind of done the work. Now that I've done the work, I'm like, okay, this is not A, maybe the change is not material, or maybe the true cost of it is actually a lot higher than they had imagined. So I think that is also really interesting learning that we've learned. I'll keep going, and please interrupt me if I
Yeah, please go into the use case. And while you're flipping slides, how are you defining organizational health? And I'm asking that question because some people will tell you spans and layers, and some people will tell you culture. And, you know, there's a range of answers to that question.
Okay,
so when you
great
start
question. Great question. That's a fantastic question. Our strength is in speed and empirical data. So a lot of the stuff that we are talking about is like spans, layers, pivoting a lot of your organizational analytics or insights into the context of your business outcomes, right? So I'll get into it in a second, but we have a whole separate white paper around organizational health with AI that if you're interested in, I can email to you after this call, or maybe I can leave it as an attachment to this deck so that people can go in and take a look at that as well.
That would be great. Thank you. Everybody would appreciate that.
Wonderful. Okay. So, you know, a lot of the stuff, but like organization design is super important. Very few companies today have fully mature org design practices. When you talk to a lot of execs, they will point to the complexity of their org structure as an inhibitor to their growth. And most people will say, look, this part of our organization is still operating under the older org structure. We want to change it, right? So if you are able to design the right structure, it means better financial results. It means better adaptation of change. It also means better engagement and retention of employees because people get burned out from like companies that go from insane hiring to sudden sort of I was talking to somebody this morning and they were like, the cheese grater is out again, right? So you want to be able to kind of make small adjustments all the time to your organizational health instead of like these massive surgeries over and over again. It's kind of where the problems are, right? I think the trends are that every single CEO that we talk to is privately saying they can do more with less. They're asking their CFOs to figure out how. I think there's a lot of AI opportunity here on workforce transformation, but a lot of that opportunity needs to be doubled down on. Plus, a lot of it is lost when you go from the HR world to finance and back again. And what we're doing is we're amplifying the ability of people to be able to do things in a very simple and fast way by doing the hard things under the hood. And I think what's happening is it's increasing a lot of agency across the company, both at the C levels as well as people underneath them recursively, right? So what does it look like in practice, right? Org design is one of the fields that I believe is going to have a lot of benefit from AI, but it's also not going to get disrupted because the question around the qualitative aspects of it, the question around the experience, an analyst or a crunchy number cruncher cannot do the things that an AI, cannot do the things that an org design expert can do. You still need somebody to sit across the table and have the tough conversation, right? It's not a pure play analytical quantitative only conversation. The analytical quantitative conversations what we make faster with AI by our data foundation, which I've talked about a little bit. But what it does is it ingests data. It has a lot of developer APIs and models where you can bring in data into the foundation. It consolidates data from multiple sources, multiple systems. I've got another like fun insight is like you'd be surprised at the number of companies that have multiple instances of SAP running inside their company or Oracle or whatever HCM platform, which they don't talk to each other well, right? So you consolidate not only the HRIS data, but also the financial data, plus all the first party data, you map it to this canonical organization, you transform it to be able to compare with what your organizational principles may look like. And this is kind of where I'm gonna touch a little bit on organizational health. Every organization we've seen has a set of principles around what is good spans and layers across what type of functions. What is a good management cost ratio? What is a good cost profile? What is all the other metrics? So we can overlay that and instantly monitor so that we can give you visual outliers on where something is outside your benchmark. And then finally, you can run validation and enrichment on it so that you can do reporting. You can do workflows like planning your business, like business planning and things like that, as well as like faster transformation, right? I talked about this before. One of the things that we strongly believe in is that once you make the software fast to value, what that means is minimal IT, flexibility, and accurate cost tracking, really easy to grow inside the organization. People want to use it. If you can do that, you are in a fantastic position to be able to gain all the benefits of AI, amplifying people's ability to do work faster. That is kind of what the approach we've taken. And I'm going to now run a quick video from our customer. That is, I think, less than a minute, but I'll hope you can hear it.
So my name is Angela. I head process data and technology at Etihad Airways. I particularly from HR technology, I think the more we equip users, the more they will like tools and use tools, right? So we don't want to limit them. We actually want to motivate them to use the tools that we put in place, and that is the case with Agent Moon. So all our HR business partners have access. We are looking into giving also access to the business, right? So that is essentially a tool not encapsulated, right, in our landscape, but is beyond. I think again that that's the success of a tool, right? And the tool is adopted, right? It's been well received, and it's been very useful to have the tool in use for this time, right? And of course ahead as well. So my name.
All right, so the journey that they had, and I mentioned this before, that I wanted to pick an actual customer journey as opposed to some sort of abstract hypothetical. We started working with them in late 2023, so not too long ago. They brought us in to help their OD and HRBP teams to save time and cost in both regular business planning and org design, as well as transformations in specific places. We took all of their people data across multiple places. Not only we consolidated and visualized it in Agent Noon. My favorite story is that if you go into their office, they have this giant screen on the main floor, and it's running a lot of Agent Noon visuals around how they use it across their company to create value. So they effectively made a demo video about our company without us knowing. It was really fun, really encouraging. And we also work with a lot of other fantastic customers like Nestle, Autodesk, Kenvue, and many others. I just wanted to pick a different geography than I think where most of my attendees are from today, just to give you a sense of how global this problem is. So they have spent a ton of time. I picked a very small time scale here, but they've spent tons and tons of hours in Agent Noon. I think this is, the data is a little bit dated, but it's already still quite a bit. They do spend like 20 to 30 minutes in the product. They export the data a bunch of times. They invite people. We see a lot of viral growth inside the product within the first 3 to 6 months, and it saves them a lot of time in both planning as well as communicating and aligning on what the way forward on certain things is.
Do you have any, and you might be getting, there you go. That's my question around decision cycles. Go ahead. That was a question.
Yes. So the benefits that we uncovered, other than like the time saved and the user sessions and whatever it may be, and I purposely only took a specific segment of time so that I didn't want to like get too much into the detail on Etihad, but I picked a time interval, which I'm not disclosing in this call. So they use it for that time interval for the minutes that I showed you. The actual values are even higher. What that did was that it actually collapsed decision-making cycles. When somebody was talking about, let's say, adding a new route and what is the template that needs to get filled out to be able to add a new route so that we can maximize our airline seat kilometers, one of our business goals maybe to increase the airline seat kilometers. How do we make sure everybody speaks the same language so that when they have their view on whether there is a problem with spans, or whether there's a problem with the cost profile, or whether there's a problem with the structuring, or whether there's a problem with the timing, everybody's speaking about the same thing. Everybody agrees that the organizational principles are the same. So therefore, people are not having to guess what the other person is talking about. A finance person can very accurately say, this plan is going to put us 3% under budget. And my confidence level on that is very high, right? Similarly, all of that back, and in the meantime, as people are making these conversations, a lot of data is continuously changing, right? So we can also ingest data and be able to manage version control. So nobody's like, is this like the latest data? Are we looking at the latest data or not, right? So all the things that I'm talking about, we are able to accelerate so that people can make the right decisions. What that does is it reduces a lot of the assumptions that people have to make to be able to accommodate for working in multi-stakeholder situations. And that creates a very simplified org design, a very simple org design, because you can break out certain parts of the organization, create multiple what-if scenarios, align with people collaboratively, just like you would, you know, modern design tool, and then say, okay, this is the one we've decided to work on, and all those changes are tracked. So when somebody goes in and says, hey, where's Gina? Where did she go? Like, where we, I thought we had this, oh yeah, actually so-and-so person, or we decided in the last meeting that this change was needed to be made. So you can do change management, version control, confidentiality, all those things to basically have the design that is the best design for you to achieve and create more impact for the leaders, which is really what endears them to the product.
Did you have an insight in this where they were able to transcend a constraint? And what I mean in context is, you know, finance will, there will be a number and you have to meet the number. That can be done, obviously,
Yes.
but, you know, it is a constraint and frequently some of the art is lost in that. So with this team and this broad team, do they, you, are you aware of one? You may not be, you might not have had insight to that, but if you did, it'd be great to share.
That's a great question. So one of the things that I learned when I built the first prototype was that the number of assumptions that I had to make in that first ever prototype, that was like 3 years ago or 4 years, maybe more, 2017, I had to make an insane amount of assumptions to be able to get to some kind of fidelity that would be able to be digestible by an exec or the decision maker, council or whatever it may be. And I think that is true even today. Yeah. So like when you say this is the example I like to give people, like, let's say we say that the an employee cost is 100 grand, right? Is that their salary? Is that their benefits? Is that AIP? Is that inclusive of fringe? Is that inclusive of our geolocation model? Most of these organizational transformation conversations are involving changes to roles and then mapping people to those positions. And based on whatever principles you have, if you map somebody into a position, you bring in their current comp, not what the role comp was. Or do you do vice versa? So for a typical person, you have to make so many assumptions on it that that course number, let's say $3 million or whatever, has to assume the extreme on each of those things. So what happens is your error bands actually reduce down to from like 10, 15%, right? Down to like 1 to 2%. So what that does is it increases the confidence and the ability to realize the benefits that are being talked about, both from a finance perspective, both from a leadership perspective. Otherwise, what happens, what I mean, this is something I overheard at a customer. When a finance person is showing you a budget number, the org design person is like thinking in their head what the positions and roles and all the changes need to look like. And vice versa, when a PowerPoint of an org chart is being presented, the finance person is actually in their head thinking, what does this look like on a spreadsheet? What do I need to do? So the fact that our product is able to do both instantly, like you can basically click one button and the next and see what the spreadsheet version of it looks like, and it's accurate to like a single digit percentage point, is incredible. Because now a lot of the constraints that were being imposed to be able to make sure that we don't kind of go off the road can be a lot narrower. Shall I continue?
You should. Yeah, we don't have any other
All right.
questions in the chat. Hopefully, I've been covering what's on people's minds.
Fantastic. Okay. So I'll keep going. Okay, so this is not Etihad customer example because I didn't want to go into like specifics in terms of cash, et cetera. But I'll say the following, right? We are able to save an enormous amount of hours to the user of the product just by virtue of like, think about this picture that I'm showing you here. You can just drag and drop somebody, and then you can create a whole PowerPoint pack instantly with all the visuals, all the before and after, all the cost. You can also create a spreadsheet. So the amount of time that we save people with just one click is fantastic. Now, the other thing is that because we expand the user base in a company, for a 15,000 employee company, we typically have 100 plus users using the product, not just one or two expert users. Because again, the product is fast, it's easy, it's very straightforward for people to invite somebody into a scenario and work on it with them. So the number of users grows. And as they grow and they're like, oh, this is actually pretty easy, they save a tremendous amount of time just in drawing boxes and calculating what the fully loaded cost with Fringe, without Fringe, with AIP, without AIP, does this have the latest rate card in there? Does it have the latest data in there? Are we able to confidentiality manage the data across all these people? And then finally, the thing I said before, when you make a headcount plan and it translates into the financial model, the typical variance expected is about 15%, which is very, very high. If you can bring that variance down to 1%, which we've demonstrated over and over again, just the amount of money you save by having to allocate fewer budget for the variances is tremendous. It also frees up a lot of that cash to deal with the risks, other risks that may be part of that plan, right? So if you think about like a salary range, it could be anywhere between 80 to 120. The finance person has to assume the full variance on it before they can build a model that doesn't kind of completely go out of whack. We can do that, and we can bring that number down very early on in the process. So that way it saves a lot of money and a lot of time down the road, right?
Yeah, and so the
The
and I think if we go back to your thinking of your architecture chart, the savings, you're applying AI to clean up the data, that you're applying AI to do a lot of the data cleanup. So what you just talked about is the scenario analysis and decision cycles, but there's a tremendous amount of savings in being able to do this faster. So
yeah.
how is we have a question around how to approach a client that doesn't want to explore it because they know they have bad data. Because I think most of them, I mean, I don't know, validate this. My experience has been everyone knows there's problems with the data. They don't know the extent of them, or what it would take to fix them has
That
been,
is
I
such a
think, a lot of
fantastic
people's
question.
experience.
That is such a fantastic question. So, early on in the sort of early on in the innings with Agent Noon, we would kind of go talk to prospects, and they would say, "Hey, this is really cool, but like my data is a total mess. So what do we do here?" Right? And the reason why we've built all these tools that, like for example, we have this proprietary tool called the Data Debugger, where you can throw a bunch of data at it. It can automatically figure out what are all the things that are wrong with it. Based on your organization principles, what are all the things that are needed to be fixed, et cetera, et cetera. So the easiest way we have uncovered to do this is to run what we call AI boot camps. And really what it is we can say to a customer, "Hey, why don't we book an hour? We will take any kind of data export that your system produces. If you want, we have tools to sanitize the data so you don't have people's actual salary, but you replace everyone's salary with a reference number. If you want to, we can also obfuscate people's names with like hashed IDs so that you don't have to worry about confidentiality, but we can take whatever the output of your Workday report is, bring it into Agent Noon, and then let you drive. It's a very hands-on keyboard session." And when those people can go in and run the kind of visuals that would normally take them months to do, and they can be like, "Okay, well, what if some of this data got fixed? We've got some project going or whatever." So all of that is like very seamless. So that is the aha moment We work with tons of consulting firms as well, both small and large, everyone from the Deloitte of the world to the 100-person companies or even the 5-person companies. And we have this like boot camp where we can get the consulting partner prepared and ready to go. And they can go and run sometimes with us or on their own a similar boot camp with their clients. And it works really well because if you can tick the data security and the data quality box relatively quickly, 1 hour usually, then you can go really fast into deployment. Because let's face it, for a large enterprise, IT is slow and IT is expensive. So if your IT team is being told that nothing is going to change, we're just going to take this data that you produce, stick it into Agent Noon. Agent Noon is going to do all the data debugging, data transformation, etc. It's a very easy thing to get through because the business demand is definitely there, right?
So tell
So
us
that's
about
kind of how
a
we do it.
fail. Tell us about a fail where it didn't meet the requirements and what you how you approached it and what you did to change and improve the tool.
Oh, okay, great. So, so again, the slightly longer answer here, perhaps, but like when I say we have a fast product and we enable fast results, we also develop very, very quickly. We build very, very fast. And not only, like I'll give you Etihad's example, right? So when we started working with Etihad, the list of things that they wanted and the list of things that we had out of the box was probably like half and half, right? But we could build so quickly during this boot camp sales process or whatever that they had increasing confidence that we were able to kind of get them to where they wanted to go very, very quickly. And you know, I'm very happy to say that we did that. We not only brought the list of requirements that they had to full completion. We also gave them a whole bunch more. And a lot of our customers, whether it's Nestlé or whether it's Kenvue, whether it's Autodesk, Etihad, we consider them design partners. So oftentimes, a lot of what our product is praised for is how simple it is. Because what we can do is we can get somebody like the people in this audience and ask them, okay, how. Teach us everything about, let's say, position versus people. How do you detach them? How do you attach them? What are you trying to do? What is the constraint here that you want to keep an eye on? And also, our architecture is modern in the sense that we typically, like any application, is built with a database. The database has rows and columns. One of the rows is employee ID or employee email or something. And then everything that you want to change. You have to change a lot of stuff to be able to change that. Modern architecture is basically built on graph technology. So what you do is you build a graph of the data, kind of like an org chart. And then as you make changes to it, the whole graph can morph very, very quickly, which is what lets us build super fast. And I think the final thing I'll say is we are very, very good at technology. We are not good at org design. We're not org design experts. That's where our customers, our design partners have been incredibly helpful and they continue to be incredibly helpful because we can go through like 10 interviews in a week with the experts who've been doing this for decades and really figure out what a consensus value set looks like on a version 0.1 and iterate that very, very quickly. So that is a humongous source of pride and advantage for us.
Are you also at this point, the AI is cleaning up the data and getting the data usable. So we've got that. Are you also applying AI to generate models at this point or are
Yes.
planning to
So
or?
my name is.
Sorry. Yes, absolutely. So I'm trying to see if I have a slide. No. So I have a whole white paper on this. I'm gonna stop sharing because I think I'm done with slides. I have a whole white paper on our AI roadmap, which I'm also able to share with people. But at the crux of it is three things: generative models, where you can basically say, based on this, what is different what-if scenarios look like. The second one is an org health kind of like a coach, where it can continuously monitor all your organizational vitals and give you a sense of where you're going off and on track. I'll send for those that are interested, just reach out to me. I'm happy to send that as well. And the third one is like the auto-completing different things where you can, once you've decided that you're going to relocate or offshore one role, there's a lot of like 50 to 60 fields that need to get updated for finance to get the accurate cost of that. We can do that instantly with our product because we can ingest all the comp data, rate cards, and so on and so forth. Plus, we can also figure out where the gaps are. So I have a white paper on our data foundation, which I'd love to share with the audience here if there's interest. I would also like to share our AI white paper if there's interest. And finally, if there's people that want to run an AI bootcamp, we can schedule one with you.
Okay, so I'm going to try to reflect that back because if this is new to people, it might be hard and you correct me. So one way is I can auto-generate when I've made some kind of a rule. Like I want to change a role to offshore and I can take that rule and apply it to the entire organization. Another one is you're looking at what the organizational patterns are. So whatever, the team size or something, for example. So you can generate the patterns in the organization and apply those more widely. And then I think
Yes.
there was a third one where you mentioned having some kind of an aspiration, like the coaching model or that kind of a thing. So you can program that aspiration and put the organizational footprint into that aspiration. Did I reflect that accurately?
That was perfect.
Okay.
The other thing that I will say is that because we've been doing AI for a really long time, we kind of have a good sense of what are the fundamental building blocks to be able to do this kind of stuff. And the data foundation is critical. Because I think the models are going to become a commodity, right? You can be able to put this model or that model on there. But if you have software that a lot of people in the organization are using to create alignment and shared understanding of what needs to happen, then you can do a lot of what is AI is doing in the programming space. So like, think about like when you go into like a Google Docs or something, it can auto-complete, right? When you start typing a sentence saying a quick brown fox, it does the rest of it. So we can do a lot of that for the data pieces. That's the third thing. We have a bit of a fitness coach trainer to be able to say where you have gaps, et cetera, et cetera. And then the third one, which we've talked about before, is like generative scenarios. So what does this all mean? It means that a lot of it is going to self-serve. A lot of it is going to be like people going in and saying, I want to do this myself. It needs to be easy. Needs to be fast, it needs to be accurate. And then I think the drudgery is what the AI helps us escape because I'm seeing a lot of people in this audience and they have decades of experience. I don't think the AI is going to do that. The AI is going to let the people with the decades of experience do the same thing a whole lot faster, right? Both from a design perspective, both from an execution perspective. This is already underway in the software engineering world, where a lot of software programming tools now do a lot of the drudgery. Similarly, in the design space, like products like Canva or Figma, the designer is even more important because their time is highly leveraged now, right? So I think the same thing will happen in the org design space with an even material impact is kind of what I tend to believe here.
Okay, we had one other kind of section we wanted to talk about, and I'm watching the. I've got one more. Oh, I've got one more question for you here. I'm sorry. Coaching through transformation with a hierarchy backbone. How would organizations whose structures change significantly month to month challenge Agent Noon? So if you've got that change, that's dynamic. That's
I
literally.
love it. That's such a fantastic question. So our whole product and company is designed on the premise that the change cycles are going to get shorter and their amplitude is going to get bigger, right? So if we go and look at automation and what's happening with AI and the move from industrialization to sort of the information age, you will see faster and more impacts. Because of our graph-based data foundation, we are in a very good position to be able to deal with those. As a matter of fact, it's happening at a lot of our customers. Obviously, their businesses are both changing strategy and tactics on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of them don't kind of, one doesn't inform the other because the it's too fast. So think of it in that context that you want to get to a position where you can embrace uncertainty because you've got the scaffolding and models to be able to deal with the thing that you have control over and not have to worry about the things that you don't, and have a bunch of scenarios in that conversation, right? So, and you know, it's easier to talk about these things, it's harder to do them in practice. So my kind of sense is that I would love to organize a boot camp for you where we change the data every 15 minutes and you can see how it impacts your designs, your scenarios, your communication, and so on and so forth.
Hey, thank you.
Fantastic question.
We so want to kind of take us home here with the last part of this we asked for in this series was to talk about we talked about ROI, but actually building capability in the organization and your observations with your clients and how they actually managed to bring Agent Noon in and make it part of the conversation. And I think this is valuable to a lot of people because it's not something they have to do all the time, right? Talk about, you know, literally the mechanics of the business case and procurement. And so any tips and experience you have there would be helpful.
Just to make sure I got the question correctly, how to help clients build internal capability? Is that?
Yeah, to be able to get adoption for the platform and be
Yes.
able to move it forward, because we talked about ROI in terms of primarily decision cycles, faster decision cycles, and data cleanup. There's actually making the business case and what gets it over the line so that you can go forward with the projects.
Fantastic question. So what, how to make the businesses, how to get it over the line. So one of the things that we underestimated early on was how our product grows virally inside a company. So most of our customers, we started with a very specific segment of the organization. We picked a very narrow scope so that, let's say for the 7,000 people in marketing, there's a lot less data, there's a lot less people who need to sign off on it, lots less people who need to. But once you get in, once you build the capability, once you see, let's say 15 to 20 people going around doing org design work with their business leaders, it starts to grow virally inside the company. So you go from marketing to finance to other functions to other geographies. So one of the things that we have learned, and this AI bootcamp or the sandbox environment is designed to help get that going very quickly, right? So what you want to do is you want to get to the good stuff as quickly as possible in a very narrow scope setting. We formalized the strategy in the last couple of months. It's working really well. But our goal is to let the user drive themselves as quickly as possible. So what we do is we organize a sandbox for them. It can have some data that is, you know, it's not like it's cleansed. So there's no like confidentiality problems. If they can't even do that, we can get them on a really sort of sample data set size. But the goal is in half an hour, they should be able to kick around and do whatever they want in the product. And they now are going from a novice product user to a somewhat advanced product user. That journey takes a really long time. And if you can do that, it demonstrates a signal to build internal capability very, very quickly. And then a lot of those procurement and IT approval, business case becomes way easier because otherwise it has to be like a fully, you know, suits and sales kind of a process. And let's face it, nobody likes that, right? Nobody wants to have a suit calling them like, you know, six times a day and saying, hey, I'm following up on blah, blah, blah. What you want to do is you want to let them build self-serve capability. If you look at all the greatest companies in the world, they actually were able to do a lot of go-to-market motion in a very affordable way. So for us, when we do a boot camp, the conditions are the following. You don't need any technical skills, number one. Two, we need to work with hands on keyboard. So if somebody wants to just be an observer, they're probably not a good fit. We want you to go in. We want you to kind of treat it like a lab and say, in an hour, I can say, if I were to do acquisition planning, target acquire, what does that look like? Okay, I'm going to keep the finance for the acquirer. I'm going to bring in go-to-market from the target. I'm going to keep this location, that, like a lot of that stuff, once they have learned how to, like once you know how to drive a car, you know, right? So once they do that, then the number of use cases that they can implement it at goes up significantly. Similarly, a lot of our consulting partners will often be, we'll see them using it for use cases that we had not even imagined. Because the core technology is a graph. You can visualize it, you can make a bunch of changes to it, you can upload the data as frequently as you want, and you can run confidentiality collaboratively. So our whole goal is to equip the user to be able to do more things faster. Once they do that, they have all the understanding of their business. They have all the understanding, context, what is going on. So they then they can pitch it a whole lot better versus kind of us trying to do it from the outside.
We have a lot of interest in the AI bootcamp in the chat, and
Okay.
you didn't answer the question around not having to have any knowledge, so that might be a great direction to take us. Do we have any other questions from anyone? Otherwise, we will start to wrap up. No? Okay, I think we've been very thorough. Okay, then what we'll be doing next, as I said, this was 3 of 3. Got really good feedback on this, so I will get another series on the ODF calendar sometime in December. For next year, with a topic, and have taken all of your chats and questions from these tech talks to try to shape the next content. And always happy to hear from any of you by email, around the topic
Yeah.
you'd like to cover.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation. I wanted to be a little bit more interactive, but I guess maybe I'll work on that for the next talk. But I put my email in the chat. I think I'm relatively easy to get a hold of. If you're interested in any of the things that I've talked about, we have a lot of material that I can send to you via email. So just reach out to me. Or anyone on our team, and they'll be able to send you a bunch of stuff. I would be thrilled to organize an AI bootcamp for you or your colleagues or and your colleagues. And we're doing some of them in different locations as well over the next kind of quarter. So if there is a geography where we can put a bunch of you together, that would be fantastic as well.
Ali, do
Okay.
you typically do the boot camps virtual or in person?
So far, we've done them virtually. But we have a couple of in-person planned for the next month. My suspicion is that they will go even better than the virtual ones.
Yes.
So we may just have a tour of, let's say, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Austin, New York, Chicago over the next kind of quarter where we can people can come in. And so far, also so far, we've done them one per customer. So like let's say we're doing one with Nestlé. It's just Nestlé people and it's Nestlé data. So if we bring in multiple people, and I'm thinking more about like the consulting firm, people who run like a consulting firm of their own, we may be able to do a workshop with them without, we'll prepare the data set, but they can come in and do the boot camp. So yeah, it's evolving as we go. We've done a ton of these over the last year. So the only one we did in person was Etihad at their office in Abu Dhabi. And that was really well received. We had probably like 25 people in attendance. So I want to try more in person if I can.
Okay, terrific. Take that under consideration and I'll see what we can do for a follow-up with that. All
Thank you. Thank you so much.
right, thanks, Ali,
Thank you
for
for your time. I appreciate
listening.
everyone joining today.
Okay. I don't think we have anything else. So thank you, everyone. And again, we'll get another series on the calendar for next year.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Gina, thank you for your time putting this new offering together. We very much appreciate it. And if anybody has any questions about the ODF as a whole, or wanted to real quick catch Ali before we wrap up, I'll stay on the line for a few minutes. So feel free to stay on. Other words, we'll send out a message when this and Ali's deck are available for viewing on our past events page. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.